From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Ladies, if you're looking for a couple of blokes who've got wood for sheep, then look no further.
Do we need to explain that?
We better not.
Okay. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent, that's Mark. Hello.
How are you, Trent?
Yep, awesome.
Looking good.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, no.
I try to make myself look nice for you, Mark.
Yeah, you do. You've got a great head for radio. I've always said that. Coming up on the show today, we have got another show packed with goodies for you. We're going to talk about everything in the news. Well, some bits that you might be interested in. We're going to talk
It's a half-ass news, we're calling it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about the German Game of the Year, the Oscars of board games, and Trent is going to tell us about his new obsession with a role-playing game. All that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh.
Oh, my God, I can't even begin to tell you how excited
I
am about this. All right, let's kick things off with something loud. Ladies and gentlemen, the finest metal song you will hear possibly this year or any other year, this... Got a little bit excited, played the song before I actually told you what it was. It's a metal supergroup called Killer Be Killed. And it's not a heavy metal show, so I'll be really quick. It's Mars Volta, Mastodon, Dillinger Escape Plan, and Soulfly, all on one album.
That's the first time I've ever seen you dance in the studio, Trent.
And I can't begin to tell you how much I've been flogging the crap out of that at home. My family's been away,
And
so the stereo has not come down below about 7 or 8.
Excellent.
But we've had time for games as well.
We have played a few games.
Yeah, and particularly last week for my birthday celebrations. Again, thank you very much for the present,
the
Spider-Man mask, and two people entirely independently bought me little plastic dogs to play with. It's an expansion to the Flashpoint game, and I got yours and another entirely separate plastic dog, which I believe has gone to a good home.
Well, I hope so. And one of our friends, Erez, did comment that you look like someone from Insane Clown Posse with that mask on.
Oh, please.
Yes.
I can do better than that, surely. So what have we been playing lately? Do you want to go first?
Well, I played a game at the meeting of the Hobart Game Society on Saturday night.
I remember those guys.
Yeah. I played a number of games, actually, but one game I played that I have been curious to try for quite some time, it came out initially back in 2011, and it was called Skulls and Roses, or Skull and Roses.
Pirate game?
No. The original iteration was around Bikey Gang Art.
Ooh.
And now there's a new version out just called Skulls. This game is incredibly, incredibly simple, but yet... Interesting.
Okay.
Basically, you've got four drink coasters, round drink coasters.
I'm liking the sound of this.
That have on one side a pattern that identifies your colour, so you know whose cards there are. And on the other side, three of the four have flowers, and one has a skull. And then you've got a little mat that you put your coasters on. What you do, it's been described as poker without the cards. So it takes away the mathiness of poker and just brings it to pure bluffing. So you're playing a coaster face down. So your buddies don't know if it's got a skull or a rose. So let's say I go first, I put a coaster, someone else puts a coaster, someone else puts a coaster. Eventually someone will make a bid. And the bid is for how many coasters they can flip over that will show flowers or roses without getting a skull.
Push your luck.
That's right. But the trick is you have to flip your own coaster first. So obviously if you play a skull, you're totally screwed. But you might want to play a skull and bid two or three, knowing that someone else is going to bid four.
But then, hang on, do you know the turn order in advance?
So
surely...
you're going around in clockwise, but when you flip them over, if you win the bid, so let's say I say two, you say three, Fred says four, Carl says five, everyone else passes, Carl then has to flip over five coasters that are flowers. He starts with his own, so you can play more than one coaster, so it could go around two or three times. So you're saying how many in the total are going to be flowers that you can flip over. You can then pick the order of which coasters you flip over after you flip over your one first.
Oh, I see.
So you're trying to work out, well, who's been bidding? So that means they probably have played a flower. but are they bluffing?
Yeah, right, right.
And how many can I flip over? And you basically, when you get a successful bid, you flip your little mat over. It's got two sides, different colours. And you're basically wanting to win two bids and you win the game. It's that quick.
So is this the sort of game that bikies will sit around and play, you know, in the Rebels stronghold?
Well, the story goes that initially to decide the leader of the club, it was the person who could be dragged behind a motorbike the longest. That was wearing people down, literally. So they invented this game. That's how the story goes.
Okay, is it themed like Sons of Anarchy at least?
Well, so no, the original one, Skulls and Roses, was very much bikey art, I've seen an expansion. So I think it played six, and then I've seen another expansion that plays another six, so you basically could put them together and play 12, where the bikey art was different bikey gangs. This new one, just called Skulls, is much more stylized. So you've got one skull, which is sort of like, you know, the Mexican festival of the death skull.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got another skull that looks like a Viking. And the flowers are, like, one's a tiger lily, one's some other flower. Like, it's much more stylized. They're taken away from the bikey art. But it's, you know, it's incredibly simple. You could make it yourself out of drink coasters. But the pure bluffing of it is just beautiful. And we actually played three games of it in probably half an hour, 40 minutes.
Just a beer and petrols type.
Great. Well, you can put your beer on the coaster as well. But yeah, just filled that sort of spot of, oh, it's the end of the night, let's play something light, but still got your brain ticking over. So Skulls and Roses, or now called Skull, I liked it.
And speaking of beer and pretzels games, we, thanks to your bad self and thanks to Tim who lent us his copy, got to play Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, yes.
Now, this has been out for a couple of years, and this is essentially a game that sets out to be the most offensive game on the market.
Yeah.
Hugely popular. Amazon have sold out several times
over. It's actually really hard to get.
There's a print and play version, which is the one that we did. Tim, this mate of ours from the Hobart Game Society, is notorious for his foam core boxes and assembling all
He's
this fantastic
job,
little gaming kits himself. So we've got his full deck, and it's an enormous box full of these cards against humanity. It's essentially every filthy racist joke that you've ever thought of in a box.
And it basically takes the mechanic of a game called Apples to Apples. And plays it on an adult scale writ large.
Very, very familiar mechanic. So there's black cards that set up a question, and it might be, I never leave home without my blank. And then there's a whole bunch of white cards which provide the answer, and that might be my mother's undies.
Oral herpes.
Two dwarves pooing into a bucket. That was one of the milder ones.
Yes.
One of the milder answers that we had on this deck of cards. And then you pile them all up, you read them all out, and you see who laughs, you know, what answer the most. It's a fairly standard mechanic. Look, it's very funny, but it didn't really hold my interest. And I've got to say, there's nothing clever about it.
Yeah.
Okay? And it was fine. You know, I certainly had fun. Perhaps me asking for something clever in this game is kind of beside the point. But I would actually like to think, at this point in my life, that I'm actually a little bit better than this. You know, I mean, I suppose if Cards Against Humanity didn't exist as a game, you'd have to invent it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Because there has to be you have to hit bottom somewhere.
and we beat it?
I think so. It's very undergraduate. It's hugely popular.
Yeah.
And what can I say? It's fine. It's Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, and it's certainly, you know, the crowd that we played it with, we all curse each other, call each other names, use lots of interesting coloured language. You know, you got to pick your group with it. That's
this is
for
not
sure.
A game you want to bust out at church.
No, definitely not.
No, it's not.
But I enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Tim.
All right. Half-assed news next.
Please.
We'll do that next.
Yeah.
On the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
There we had some Bad Dreams with their song Chills. Before that, Crystal Antlers with Persephone. Or as Trent likes to call it, Persephone. Persephone, Greek thingy.
If you say so.
We're the Dice Men Cometh, Trent and Mark, 99.3 FM. We are here, and coming up is a segment we like to call Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. We're going to talk about some news. It's going to be half-ass news.
Is that the theme?
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be our new theme song for half-ass news. It's a, sort of a half-ass theme, don't you think?
All right, well, if you're prepared to do that every time we haven't quite figured out in true half-ass style how often we're going to do this, but we're doing it this week.
Half the time?
Because the big news from the past week is from Wizards of the Coast in a number of different areas. Release date set for D&D next. It's coming.
Oh, we've been waiting for this for a while.
Yeah, 5th edition, and they've been beta testing it by releasing little chunks of the rules. Mm. We've even had a crack at one of those ourselves with our friends from ABC Radio's Nerdzilla, and it was okay.
Yeah, nothing really new about it, though.
Not particularly. No. Look, Wizards of the Coast have got everything to prove with 5th edition, as I believe we've mentioned before. So this will debut in July. On the 15th of July, there'll be a starter set, which will be your basic, you know, pre-rolled characters and a little bit of an adventure that newbies can play through. But the big one that we're all waiting for, which won't come out until after Gen Con in Indianapolis in the States, August 19, the Player's Handbook. Also, there'll be the first adventure, The Horde of the Dragon Queen. And DM's Guide,
Monster Manual, all that stuff
is coming. Yeah, so it all kicks off in July. D&D next.
Okay.
In the meantime, Wizards of the Coast have been very busy suing Cryptozoic. Ooh. Cryptozoic Entertainment. This is a little bit of a David and Goliath battle.
Yeah.
Cryptozoic, not a big company at all.
They're only really known, as far as I'm aware, for they bring out the odd sort of licensed game. They didn't do the Firefly game. What's the one I'm thinking of?
Well,
DC Deck Builder or the Marvel Deck Builder, one of those ones?
Frankly, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay, but look, Wizards of the Coast, one of the biggest gaming companies in the world, and they're suing these tiny little guys for infringement of Magic the Gathering because of an online card game that they've put out called Hex Shards of Fate. They launched this with a Kickstarter, Cryptozoic did, and it raised over $2 million.
Wow.
So people saw something they liked. Mm. Maybe it was its resemblance to Magic. They look kind of similar to me. Cryptozoic, nonetheless, have called the suit frivolous. We'll probably end up with some kind of out-of-court settlement here where Wizards of the Coast get a taste of the action, because there's no way the Cryptozoic has got pockets deep enough to fight particular legal battle. Just also on the fact that D&D Next is just been released, the marketing campaign for it stepping up big time.
Oh,
Konami working with Wizards of the Coast to release a D&D slot machine.
What?
Coming to an oasis near you.
I thought you were going to say like an online game or something like that. I know they've done that before with the fourth edition. They had that, the Facebook game.
Yeah, that'll be coming. Don't worry. Yeah. Don't worry. They're going to pull out all the stops because it's got to work for them.
Yeah, well, that's right. They've sunk so much time and effort into it.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Super Starter set coming out in July with boosters, something called Pendulum Monsters. Who cares? And
this is half-assed news, not who gives a rat's news.
I'm a comic book fan, comic book nerd.
Yes.
Are you familiar with the comic book Chew at all, released by IDW?
No.
Okay. It's just a bizarre idea. Chew is an Asian American detective who gets psychic impressions from anything he eats.
Right. I thought you were going to talk about like a Mexican superhero who says, "I'm talking to Chew."
No. Racist. Tony Chu, it's a chypopath, I think they call it. So he eats something and he gets psychic impressions of where it's come from. And this includes what happens when he eats people.
Oh, no.
That's the setup for this very surreal black comedy. It's being turned into a cartoon series, a hugely popular comic, and it's going to be turned into a series of board games as well, which will come out from IDW, and that'll start early next year. Just a bizarre character.
Yeah.
I've got no idea if it's going to be any good. And last of all, Seven Wonders, a game. Infamous.
We love it here at the Dice Men Cummer.
On this show, yes.
Well, you've never won it.
Ever.
On your birthday, how'd you go?
Third. I don't really like to talk about it.
Yeah, we couldn't even throw it and let you win, could we?
Look, I might have slightly better chance in this new version of the game that's coming up, Seven Wonders Duel. Because, of course, the problem with Seven Wonders as it stands is that it's you need three players.
Yeah.
At least. It doesn't work as a two-player game. Yeah, not really.
Yeah, I've only tried it once with the mechanism in that comes in the box and it's a dummy
hand. Yeah, so this is a two-player version of Seven Wonders. It's a standalone game, not an expansion. I'd have a 50-50 chance of winning. So I'm going to be all over that.
I think you're talking yourself up a bit there, actually.
And that is half-assed news.
Look, I've got a couple of quick Kickstarter updates. I just wanted to follow up on last week. Rise to Power, the card game that I talked about that's a cross between sort of Suburbia and Race to the Galaxy. Australian design, looks really great. Rise to Power was fully funded.
Fantastic.
Fantastic Aussie game being produced, so keep an eye out for that one. Also, because we had a bit of interest in the Labyrinth Zombie Hedge Maze, I just want to let people know it's over 50% funded now. Still got 18 days to go.
This is the one in Victoria?
Yeah, I'm still not sure where it is, actually.
Oh, my God. But, we're so half-assed.
Yeah. But, look, I just want to let people know it only costs $45 for a player spot.
If you can get a plane ticket to wherever it is.
Or you happen to live in the area where it is, which is somewhere. Anyway, so it's over 50% funded. And, Trent, did you see a new version of The Agents?
Oh,
I think it's called The Agents Return or something?
Yeah, so this is a game designer who, I believe he's an Israeli bloke, and he's put together this little card game called The Agents, where you've got lines of secret agents to your left and to your right.
Yeah, we talked about it in one of our What We've Been Playing sessions.
The way they come out, the way they're oriented.
The agents turn.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So they've got a new version where they've got a better box, nicer cards, more expansions.
It was a very successful first
Kickstarter. Yeah, well, this one already, it's not quite finished yet. It's already 400% funded.
Okay.
Again, looks, I mean, you know, the first one looked really good. This one looks even better.
Does that mean people are going back and buying it again, or is it people who missed out the
first
time?
Yeah, I don't know, because I'm more thinking it's more that the buzz that was generated by the first round has got people to go back and maybe have another look at it. And pick it up this time where they didn't last time. I don't know, but it's proven very popular.
Or is it just more of what we like to call milking the lizard?
Anyway, that's all I've got for quarter-assed Kickstarter.
Okay, so maybe what we should do in future with this is maybe one week I'll do half-assed and you do it that way. Maybe
I just think we just keep going in our merry half-assed way and just do whatever we like.
All right. Well, what are we going to do next?
Let's play some music.
And then.
Oh, coming after that, we're going to talk about the Oscars of board games, the Spiel des Jahres, German Board Game of the Year. Nominees for 2014 have just been announced. It's very exciting. It's a prize with a lot of history. And I'm going to tell you about some of that history, talk about some of those games, let you know how few of those games Trent's actually played, and lots more coming up in the Dice Man Cometh. That was Crate of Gold with Alberta Cross. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark and Trent here to talk about all things games and some exciting news this week.
The Spiel des Jahres.
The Spiel des Jahres.
We call it the Academy Awards of Gaming for good reason. It's probably the highest profile awards in the industry. It's German, duh. And that is kind of the spiritual home of the modern board game.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, they don't call them Euro games or German-style games, in fact, sometimes for a reason. But the SDJ, let's call it, because, you know, my pronunciation isn't great.
And basically anything that wins or gets nominated, the sales just
go
spike,
through the roof. Absolutely,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
This prize has been running in one form or another since 1979.
Wow, okay.
And recently they've added a couple of things. They've added the Children's Game of the Year and what they call the Kennerspiel, or the Connoisseur's Game, if you like.
This is the one that I'm all over. Seven Wonders, I know we don't like to talk about it, but it does seem to keep coming up, was the very first winner of the Kennerspiel.
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting because you wouldn't look at that and say, oh, you wouldn't really call it like a gamer's game. It's not much over the level of a gateway game, but they do vary up and down. Agricola is one that got the year before, they didn't actually have a category, but they gave it like a special award all of its own, and which sort of was the forerunner of this connoisseur's game. They do go up and down in sort of complexity.
Something I've noticed overall with the Spieljahres awards, and perhaps more so with the Kennerspiel, is that it's not necessarily about complexity. Or even really about clever mechanics. It seems to be about just hitting some kind of sweet spot.
Yes, definitely.
In amongst or all of that. Something that might have very simple mechanics but provokes a lot of thought. Something that has that complexity to it, but then you can play it in under 40 minutes.
Exactly. And really, I mean, the idea of the game of the year, it's designed to be what they'd call a family game.
Absolutely.
Which in most cases we would say would be a gateway level game, or maybe just slightly above. It's designed that, you know, any family could go pick this game up and have fun. To give you an example, some of the games that have won this game in this prize in the past, Scotland Yard. We talked about it in Letters of Whitechapel the other day.
Yep.
Some of the early stuff is very German, but in 1995, a game you might have heard of, Settlers of Catan,
the one that started this whole thing.
Won this game. Carcassonne in 2001, Ticket to Ride in 2004.
A perennial favourite of many people.
That's right. Dominion, the game that started the deck building craze, won this in 2009. Dixit, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, won in 2010.
So Dixit actually won the Spiel des Jahres.
Yep.
I mean, that's the simplest kids game. Again, that's got that Cards Against Humanity mechanic mechanic that we've talked about previously. Couldn't be simpler. Game of the year.
Yeah, and just, I guess, you know, for the novelty factor of the art and how you played and everything, they have the game of the year, they have the children's game of the year and the Kennerspiel game of the year. Most of these, now these games only have to be out in Germany, so a lot of the time we don't actually see these games.
But when they get awarded, they get picked up for international distribution.
Look, some of these children's games, I love the titles of them. I'll give my German a test. One of the recommended games is called Oh Schreck, der Speck fliegt weg.
You've got the translation.
Which is, oh my God, what makes the bacon fly?
Good question.
And Geister, Schatzsuchmeister, which means ghost, treasure master, and not I just shout myself because I saw a ghost. So most of these...
Sorry, can you say that again?
Geister, Schatzsuchmeister. Trent's just shat himself as well, I think. And, you know, another kids' game called Get Lost Flynn or Horror Around the Witching Hour. Anyway, look, with the children's game, most of those games, not many people have seen because they are just German games. There is actually a huge, huge market for children's games in Germany. Some of those, usually what you see is one or two of those will make the cut to be translated into English. You may have seen... it's called Magical Labyrinth, and it's got the magnets and the big steel ball bearing. I know.
Fantastic little kids game.
Our friend Carl has a copy. You might even have a copy of that one yourself. I'm not sure.
I've played it with my daughter. Pearl,
seen it
with
Hulk's.
Carl's kids. Yeah.
So that was. I don't think it was a winner, but it was definitely a recommended or a nominee for the Children's Game of the Year. It's one of the few that have sort of made the cut over to English in recent times. But you know, when I look at this, the nominees. The German Game of the Year, 2014.
Well, we don't need any sound effects. Man. You're on fire tonight.
Half-assed sound effects. So the nominees for the Game of the Year this year are Camel Up.
What?
Splendor. And Concept. Have you heard of any of those games?
Splendor I've at least heard of, and I understand that it's quite widely regarded. Can you give
Not the music festival.
Oh, sorry. Can you give us a quick...
So Camel Up is a game about racing camels around a pyramid. You've got your little wooden meeple camels, and because they've got humps, they can stack. So sometimes it's very funny because your camel can land on another camel, and when the bottom camel moves, all the camels move.
Okay.
So hilarious. And you've got a pyramid in the middle that you build out of cardboard, held together with rubber bands. It's like a dice tower, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. It's very Euro, bit of a camel race. Splendor, again, you know, it's very Euro game. You've got nice poker chips that are gems, and each turn you can get some gems or you can buy some cards that are out in the middle, and then the cards give you more gems, and you turn the gems into points and...
Boring.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Concept is an interesting concept. It is one of these sort of party-style games where you're trying to get across, believe it or not,
A concept.
Okay.
And you've got a big board that has lots and lots of pictures.
Is this a charades, like a re-implementation?
A bit like that. And so you, let's say your clue was kangaroo. You might put, use these little cubes. You might put a cube next to the generic animal. You might put a cube next to brown. You might put a cube next to someone jumping or an arrow pointing up to try and get people to guess it. And you move the cubes around. Look, it's quite interesting.
Sounds like charades for introverts.
Yeah, yeah, look, it's quite interesting, but none of these games are grabbing me, I'm telling you. On the recommended list, you've got Battlesheep, which, again, I've never heard of. Battlesheep. Battlesheep.
Okay, yep. that at least sounds interesting.
Yep. You've got SOS Titanic, which potentially is a game about rearranging deck chairs. I don't know. Because, again, I haven't heard of it.
Is that one designed by Antoine Bowser?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so look, the designer's name caught my eye
look,
on that one.
You can see I've done lots of half-assed research into this.
As always.
Love Letter is on the recommended list. Now, I can totally get behind that one. That is a fantastic little game.
How that's not a nomination for Game of the Year, I don't know. You know. Love Letter, the game with just
16 cards?
That's it, yep. And it kickstarted a whole craze. Not literally kickstarted with a capital K.
Yeah.
It began the whole craze of micro games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's great today. I mean, I would play that one anytime. Potato Man, not Mr. Potato Head, which I could say, you know, would be worthy of nomination maybe 30 years ago.
Is that one set in northern Tasmania?
I don't know. It could be, okay, the Giant Potato Man. And Sansuchi, which, again, I haven't heard of it. I haven't heard of any of these games. Where have I been the last 12 months?
A lot of them are only released in Europe, though, and that's the thing we have to remember.
Yeah, and as we say, a lot of these then come to the English-speaking world after they've been successful in Germany. Very rarely you will get an American game or an English game which is so good when it's released it does grab the attention of the German judges. Sometimes not until it's been released in German, though. So sometimes you see the situation where, I'm not sure if it was Ticket to Ride, maybe gets nominated the year after it was released because that's when the German edition gets released. Yeah. So look, there's a lot of ho-hum there for me. They're all very Euro except for Love Letter.
Well, having gone through those and being a little bit disappointed, frankly, I turn my attention to the nominees because this is the one, the gamers' games, the connoisseurs' games that we're interested
in. People usually get very excited about. And, you know, in the past we've seen games like Terra Mystica, which, you know, was all the rage. Caverna, which has been played the last few weeks at Hogs. You know, people have been very, very excited about these games. Gamers get very excited about them.
Not for families, more for nerds.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right. Power games.
Nomination one, Istanbul.
Not Constantinople.
Collecting rubies in a Turkish bazaar. There's a board of 16 tiles in a grid. Various actions on each of the tiles. There's a worker placement mechanic. You're playing a merchant and you've got four helpers. The twist on it seems to be that when the helpers do the action when you put them down on the tile, but then they do it again when you take it off. So you've got to figure out the order that you're deploying them in, and you're doing this to buy increasingly expensive rubies.
Right, okay.
That's all I know.
Yeah, sounds incredibly exciting. It's me back.
Nice artwork. Yep. Concordia, a game of Roman economic development. Yep. Just setting me on fire.
Yeah.
It's literally trading in the Mediterranean. But with a little bit of a deck-building mechanic.
Okay.
It does seem to be a bit of a collection of very clever mechanics, but it's a Euro, very heavy Euro, a little bit of interaction. The third nomination, Rococo. Yep, 18th century artistic cheese in a game. The theme, dressmaking for French royalty.
Oh,
are you freaking kidding me? How am I supposed to get interested?
I do not know. Look, the only thing that brightened my day, not even much, with the recommended list for the Kennerspiel Guildhall, at least that's a game that I have played. Not a bad game, not a brilliant game. I wouldn't have thought it made a list like this. Amerigo, I've heard about it. It's another tradie in the Mediterranean game. Russian Railroads, which I have played and I've talked about on here before.
I at least hear it's good.
Yeah, look, you know, I hear that is good and it made the recommended list. And Bloodbound, again, I haven't heard of it. So, look, am I just way behind the time or am I just not interested in this these Euro turds. I don't know.
Well, I think this is probably an indication of things to come, because anything that wins out of these awards, which are presented in June, July, they'll get local distribution deals, and we'll probably get them in time for Christmas, yeah. I imagine.
Look, I don't know. I am about ready to reach for some sort of gun, I think. My love's a
revolver. Geister, Schatzelmeister!
You're with the Dice Men Cometh. We do speak English here. Sprechen Sie English! We're Trent and Mark on the Edge Radio 99.3. And we just heard the... What did we hear? We just heard the Shoe Suede Blues by the Frowning Clouds. Before that, we heard Madonna with Revolver. I swear, with that song, someone said to her, I bet you can't say a piece of female genitalia in a song 20 times. And she said, yeah, watch me. Mm. And she couldn't get anything that rhymes with clitoris. Anyway, now, Trent.
Perhaps we could brainstorm that another time. Yeah. I want to talk about an obsession. Because, as you know, Mark, mm-hmm. I'm a man who tends to get obsessed. I'm like this. I run hot and cold on things. I'm all or nothing. Or you might say, to put it another way, that I'm easily led. Big fan of the website Shut Up and Sit Down, their podcasts, yes, and video reviews. Something that they've featured recently is an RPG that I am just all over. Mark, what's attractive about RPGs for you? Role-playing games we're talking about here. We're talking about your Dungeons & Dragons, yeah, that kind of thing. What's attractive about the systems that you've enjoyed?
For me, it's the immersion. It's mm-hmm. the escape. It's the getting into character. I don't want to get bogged down in mechanics.
Nope.
That's why I've loved some of those indie RPGs like Fiasco so much, because yep. it's about the character and character development.
Suspension of reality and also the shared experience. And it's basically, the thing is, I enjoy these things so much, and not enough of my friends want to play them, so mm-hmm. I basically have to become the GM,
nice,
which means I have to pore over the rules, and that's what I'm currently doing right now with... Yep. The Star Wars role-playing game, which was released last year, I believe, by Fantasy Flight. Oh, this is a good system. I've not played it yet, but I've spent the last week reading nothing but this rule book. And it's really interesting the way they're doing it, because the Star Wars universe is huge, of course. Right?
How huge?
Well, I'm...
You're gesturing. Wow, I didn't know your arms stretched that far apart.
So they've broken it down into a series of smaller systems. They're all set in the original trilogy universe. Ooh, so okay. Little elements of the expanded universe from the books and what have you come into it. There's nothing from the prequels as yet. So they're obviously pitching it at people.
Old school.
Exactly. So there's three installments
to this.
Have
you had enough of that music yet?
Thank you. There's three installments to this. Edge of the Empire is the first one. This is the one I'm reading at the moment. There's Age of Rebellion, which is coming out. Well, it's in beta testing at the moment.
Oh.
And that's about basically playing your Wedge Antilles type character. That's about being involved in the Rebellion,
okay,
up against the Empire, doing the trench run and the Death Star, all that kind of stuff. And then the next one to come out in 2016, I think, will be, maybe 2015, will be Force and Destiny. So
Ewok Wrestling.
Well, close, Jedi Knights. But the first one, Edge of the Empire, is about your smugglers and bounty hunters.
So you get to be Han Solo.
Do you want to own your own Millennium Falcon, the YT-1300 freighter, and do you want to fly around smuggling crap?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody wants to do that, all right?
I'm going to shoot first.
What makes this really interesting are some of the core mechanics, mm-hmm. and it's quite rules light. So it uses a whole bunch of custom dice. You got your stats in your character,
mm-hmm.
strength, dexterity, whatever. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head, but they're each one of them is actually just capped at 6 rather than the 18 or 20 that you might imagine. Now, what that number does, that tells you how many ability dice you're rolling. On the ability dice, there are successes and there are failures. So you're rolling those, pass and fail. But then you also have some skills in a particular ability that tell you how many of those green ability dice, mm-hmm. you can upgrade to a 12-sided yellow proficiency dice. Oh. Which, and you roll that and it gives you a higher chance of getting a success.
So hang on, go back to the green dice again.
Right.
How many
okay.
sides have they got?
They are 8-sided dice.
Okay, right. D8s.
D8s with successes and failures yes. on it. And a bunch of other symbols as well. Now, look, you're actually building a dice pool with this. So you'll get a bunch of the ability dice, maybe some proficiency dice if you're successful. You'll be rolling against difficulty dice
yes.
from 1 to 5, all in the same roll. Mm. They'll have a whole bunch of failures on them.
Yep.
And then there's also boost dice, setback dice, depending on what's happening in the environment. You're rolling a huge amount of dice in this massive dice pool for both for successes and failures that'll cancel each other out. But then there's also results of advantage, triumphs and despair that can have direct impact on combat but also on the narrative. So you might be trying to shoot at a stormtrooper who's standing at the bottom of a cliff and you'll roll a failure and miss him, but you've rolled a triumph as a part of that roll. So what that means is that your stray shot
hits a rock,
exactly,
falls on his head.
And falls on his head.
Unlucky stormtroopers.
So, and all of this is done just in one big fat dice roll that makes a lot of noise on a wooden table.
Oh.
I can imagine. So that's the core mechanic. That's the first thing that got me interested
okay.
in this. Then there's a couple of other little bits and pieces like the way it handles character motivation. That's done through a system called obligation. We all know that Han Solo had a debt to Jabba the Hutt.
Yes.
Okay, now sometimes that seemed to be bothering him a little bit more than it did at other times. At the start of every game session, you actually work out every character's obligation as a percentage. You make a percentile roll, and if it comes in under that level, then it actually has a mechanical effect on that game session where the characters and those in question are being negatively affected on their rolls. They'll have to have maybe a few more of those setback dice in their dice pools, okay? So it's actually playing on their minds, and that's in addition to something, a narrative element that a GM might bring in, like a bounty hunter suddenly turning up.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that obligation mechanic. Then there's the way it brings the Force in. Han Solo, not a big believer in the Force.
Yes.
It's not a game with Jedi Knights in it at this point, but you might be a Force sensitive.
Mm.
And there are also some destiny points that you can play with. Now, these are little points that you can spend that actually change the game.
It is your destiny.
They might give you some extra dice to roll in the pool to make it... You're just going to keep going with that, aren't you?
I can't talk about Star Wars without doing that.
So you can spend your white light side of the Force destiny points to say, oh, well, look, all of a sudden, Luke's got a grappling hook at his belt.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that item of equipment that you forgot to pack, or it might just be to add an extra dice to a dice roll. But when you spend a white one in your favour, that becomes a black point that the GM can spend against you.
Which to maintain the balance of the Force.
Which makes the GM more of a player in the game rather than someone who's just sort of doing the set dressing.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it does sound interesting. Yeah, okay. So
Here's my question, though, and I don't know if you're about to get to it.
All right.
Do I get to tell a story? Because I'm hearing a lot of dice rolling, lot of mechanics. I'm not hearing much about... telling a story.
Well, there's a bunch of extended campaigns. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's two. I say a bunch. There's two. There's
a couple.
Two. Yeah, and a couple of shorter adventures.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of home cooked stuff that's available.
Yeah.
Now, look, since the rule book for this is not cheap. It's a Fantasy Flight rule book. It's about 400 plus pages.
Wow.
It's quite a read. It retails for about $90.
Mm.
It's very, very nice with beautiful artwork in
it.
I frankly can't afford this at this point because I'm not sure if people are going to want to play with me. Mark, nudge.
So you've given up on looking at this system, have you?
I've downloaded it as a pirated PDF.
No!
And look, listen. Yes, I'm out there
a
saying
space pirate.
I'm out there saying I've done it. I've done a criminal act. But look, I'm doing this to actually
allegedly. You allegedly may have done this.
No, I have because this is the thing.
Trent, don't say that.
I'm checking this out for consideration of buying it, and I've got to say I'm very, very impressed. But this is the ethical dilemma that it's led me to. I have these PDFs now. Somebody else has scanned these and uploaded them, okay? And it's all on my computer, and I'm flipping through it going, this sounds amazing. But it is expensive, If I want to buy the custom dice, I can do that, or I could buy the dice app for my iPhone, which is just $6.
Except then you lose the whole rolling huge mountains of dice on a wooden clunky clunk 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 fun of it.
I'm not sure. I'm a 42-year-old man with a family. I'm not sure how much time I'm going to get to actually, you know, pretend to be Han Solo on a week-to-week basis. Do I want to plonk down all this money for something that I might not be using a hell of a lot of? I don't really have the time. Mark, will you play with me?
Trent.
It sounds exciting.
It does. It sounds fantastic.
I want to be Han Solo.
You know what I think?
I want my own Millennium Falcon.
I think that
I've
we
always,
should...
But since I was 5 years old, Mark, this is always what I wanted to do.
Trent.
Yes.
I promise I'll play with you.
Yay!
But I think we should reflect on this for the next 7 days or so.
I'm not endorsing the illegal downloading of rule books.
Yeah, no, I don't want to reflect on that. I want to reflect
I'm not
on
happy
playing.
With myself that I've done it.
I think we should hear from the listener out there what they think about this system and role-playing in general, because we haven't talked about it a lot, but we are out of time.
Oh, we are. We've got to go.
We have to go. So tune in next week to hear who Trent could attract to the edge of the Empire to play Bounty Hunters with him in his Aluminium Falcon. And we'll see you then. Until then, we'll leave you with Architecture in Helsinki, a great Australian band, with their song You Tell Me, Where the Dice Men Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. See you next week.
Geister, Schatzelmeister!
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.